We are in question 42 on our study of Proverbs, referring to Proverbs 22, verse 9. As I looked at this, I thought, when he asks who will be blessed, and he's got an A and a B in there, and I looked at 22:9, I thought, it doesn't lend itself to an A and a B, but I think I understand what he's talking about. So in question number 42, what are the A and B that he's looking for?
My version says bountiful eye.
Bountiful eyes, yeah.
Or good eye. I have a footnote that says good. And that would be the first one. And the second one, for he giveth his bread to the poor. It's still talking about the same person. So
right.
I agree. It's not really an A and B.
It's an A and A. So, anyway, so it's and the English Standard Version says bountiful eye also. American Standard says what? Bountiful eye, right.
Yeah. But I don't know exactly which one this is, but it says generous eye.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I think the commentator used a number of different ones. Generous eye, benevolent eye, or what it is, though, is what the point that he's trying to make in the commentary is that it's a little stronger than just good. In other words, it's not a good eye. It's something that's stronger than that, so benevolent and or generous. So I think what the footnote has, good?
Yes.
All right. So anyway, that's what we're looking at there, is that who will be blessed, the person that's bountiful, who will be blessed, the person that shares his bread with the poor. But in this, the connecting word between the two is for, and for is a conclusion. So that's why I find it strange that he wanted two things here. But I think what he wanted to show is that having a bountiful or good or benevolent eye or generous eye goes to more than just sharing one's bread with the poor. But it is indeed something that is counted in being having a bountiful or benevolent eye, but of course, when we look at the first part of the psalm or proverb there, we can understand that it's just standing by itself. Whoever has a bountiful eye will be blessed. What does this tell us? This tells us that a person that's generous will be blessed. By whom?
By God.
That's right. Now, of course, we need to understand or remind ourselves once again. I mean, if we go back up to verse 1 of this chapter 22, it says, a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, and favor is better than silver and gold, and so on. We need to remember that pretty much every verse is nominally a separate topic. So that's why it's difficult to title, for example, a proverb, because there's so many different things. So the whole way down, we have different topics. Now, occasionally, we have a proverb that is uniform, that's talking about one thing all the way through. And sometimes we have a couple or three verses tied together that are talking about the same thing. But then it'll go off into something else. For example, in verse 6, it's been talking about a bunch of other things, and then it says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, even when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now, that could be said to be a sort of a summation of some of the things that have been said before, but it does just seem to just pop out of there in the middle of things. So, verse 9, though, talks about being blessed, and I think we understand that that's important for us to do. And there are a number of places where that we could look, where we could find that the Old Testament encourages, demands, commands that we take note of the poor. I think the one that that as I was looking at these things that I thought was the most succinct, you might say. Let me see if I can get to it here. Is in Leviticus 25, starting in verse 25. Oop, there we go. Switch versions here. So in Leviticus, whoops, I always do that. Leviticus 25, it's talking about the redemption of property. So in the middle of this, in the book of Leviticus, which is a telling of the laws of God, it's telling in here what we need to do in order to redeem property. In other words, if you sold property and you want to get it back or something, or you sold it not because you want to sell it, but because you're sort of forced to by circumstances. Now, starting in verse 25, through verse 28, it says, if your brother becomes poor and sells part of his property, then his nearest redeemer shall come and redeem what his brother has sold. If a man has no one to redeem it, and then himself becomes prosperous and finds sufficient means to redeem it, let him calculate the years since he sold it and pay back the balance to the man to whom he sold it, and then return to his property. But if he does not have sufficient means to recover it, then what he sold shall remain in the hand of the buyer until the year of Jubilee. In the Jubilee, it shall return, in the Jubilee, it shall be released, and he shall return to his property. Now, what is the Jubilee?
70?
I believe that's correct. So, every 70 years, the people were required to return everything that was not theirs through inheritance back to the people who it was originally given to. So if I sold my land to somebody, he could not keep that in perpetuity because it was assigned to me essentially by God. God distributed the land amongst the tribes, and if I sold it somewhere else, then I would get that back. So when we're talking here about in verse 27 of Leviticus 25, that says, let him calculate the year since he sold it and pay back the balance to the man to whom he sold it, and then he returned his property. And so if I sell a, what? If I sell my property and it's 50 years until the Jubilee, I sell it because I'm poor and I need the money, and it's 50 years to the Jubilee, and then all of a sudden my great aunt dies and leaves me a gazillion shekels, and so now I'm prosperous again. I want to get my land back. In this instance, he's got nominally about 50 years until the Jubilee and what it would be given back to him for free, as it were. So that means that if he wanted to get it back again, he would need essentially to pay the entire price because it's there so long until the Jubilee. But if he sold it and there are only 2 years to the Jubilee and he got this windfall profit, then, yeah.
That is incorrect. It's every 7 years.
It is 7 years. Okay. Forget.
It's also called the sabbatical year.
The sabbatical year. I'm sorry. You know, seven sounded right, and I thought, no, I was thinking 70 also. But, so... I picked up on the influences here and went along with 70, but it is 7 years. So if then there were only a couple of years left until the Jubilee, so there. Never mind.
Yes, the sabbatical year, every seventh year, during which, according to the law, the fields and the vineyards were to be uncultivated and their produce to be shared with the poor and the strangers. The debts of Israelites were to be remitted. After seven times seven of sabbatical years, which was appointed a year of Jubilee, in which all the lands that had been sold or forfeited return to their original owners, and all the slaves were set free. Says, although there is no record of the actual observance of the Jubilee year, it is frequently referred to in Scripture. So,
all right. So we retract our first previous statements. Go on with 70 years. Pardon?
Mine says 50. If you're Leviticus 25, starting in verse 8.
Oh, yeah, that's right. 7 times 7 is 49.
Yeah, so 50. And the 50th year is a year of Jubilee.
I don't know where I'm coming up with 70. But 70 is used too many times in the Bible. So,
70 times 7,
you know. Yeah. So it's 7 times 7. That's 49. So 50 years. Thanks, Noah. that indeed is correct. So be that as it may. If the math is such that we're close to the Jubilee year, that means that I think what it would mean is that I don't have to pay as much to get my land back.
You don't have to pay it at all. They have to get it back.
If we're approaching the Jubilee year and I want my land back before the Jubilee, then because here in Leviticus chapter 25, verse 27, there's 26, if a man has no one to redeem it, then he himself becomes prosperous and finds sufficient means to redeem it. Let him calculate the years since he sold it and pay back the balance to the man to whom he sold it and then return to his property. So if the man has had my property for 45 years and I want to get it back before the Jubilee, so he's had 45 years of the usage of the land, or of, you might say, of the amount that he gave me to purchase that land. If there's only 5 years left, then I think that I would only need to pay 5/50 of what he sold me, or of what he gave me to buy the land back. So if I want to get the land back before it has to go to me anyway in 5 years, then I would pay him one tenth of what he paid me in order to get the land back, because he's used, as it were, he's used that money for the last 45 years. So whether that makes sense or not, I'm not sure. And I'm not sure that it has anything to do with Proverbs 22:9, but go ahead.
Okay, I think that Deuteronomy 15, verse 7.
Deuteronomy 15, 7?
Seems to hit more about what we're talking about here.
Oh, yeah. Let me read that. Deuteronomy 15, starting verse 7. If among you one of your brothers should become poor in any of your towns within your land that the Lord God has given you, is giving you, you shall not harden your heart or shut your hand against your poor brother, but you shall open your hand to him and lend him sufficient for his need, whatever it may be. Take care lest there be an unworthy thought in your heart, and you say, the seventh year, the year of release, is near, and your eye look grudgingly on your poor brother, and you give him nothing, and he cry to the Lord against you, and you be guilty of sin. You shall give to him freely, and your heart shall not be begrudging, when you give to him, because for this the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in all that you undertake. Verse 11, for there will never cease to be poor in the land. You shall open wide your hand to your brother, to the needy, and to the poor in your land. All right, so once again, here's seven.
Yes.
So apparently there's a difference between the seventh year and the 50th year, but I guess we'll have to do more studying to find out what the difference between the seventh year and the 50th year is.
Be that. The 50th year deals largely with land, property, and property rights.
Okay. So.
I don't know what the seventh.
Yeah, the seventh is. Right.
This one, Deuteronomy 15, says you forgive the debts
every
7 years. And so if your brother comes to you and says, hey, I need money, and you're like, but it's almost the time where I've got to forgive all of that. You got to wait until after that, and then you lend the money, then you're doing a bad thing.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, say, yeah, if I lend him now, and it's only, you know, 3 days until the end of the seventh year, then after that, he doesn't owe me anything. I go, well, that doesn't work out at all. So that's, so, but our attitude is not supposed to be such that we think that way. I guess we don't really have to worry about that too much now, unless we want to somehow equate that with income tax, but I'm not sure how that would work. But, the thing is that, and this does then tie in with verse 9 of chapter 22 of Proverbs, talking about the person who's bountiful, that his eye will be, who has a bountiful eye, that he'll be blessed. That kind of person is the person that wouldn't turn away from lending to a poor brother who asked, just because it's only 2 years until the seventh year. Or 2 years until the Jubilee, whichever.
Or do you just give it to them, not caring, truly caring whether you get it back or not.
Right.
Because that's
right.
It's yes, you can. If you get it back, fine. If you don't, that's okay too.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember now. It's
in the Bible.
In the Bible, yeah, it is. lend, never expecting a return, I think, something like that. And then, but, and if we look at the law here, where we are in Leviticus and, well, in the four books, after the book of Genesis, when we look at those, we understand if one is going to lend to his brother, how do we treat him differently than we would a foreigner? Or we don't charge interest.
Mm-hmm.
To a foreigner, we can charge interest, but to our brother, we cannot. Jenny, did you have a thought?
Luke 6:35. But love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for he is kind to the ungrateful and the evil.
Okay. And then continuing on, be merciful, even as your Father is merciful. And when we look at Proverbs 22:9, it's very much like that. Be merciful. And so we see the man with the bountiful eye, and the man who was, what does it say? Shares his bread with the poor. And I think in the commentary, the guy mentioned something think about the rich man and Lazarus. That rich man had the opportunity to follow the law that he was supposed to be following and take care of the poor man that was laid at his gate full of sores. And he failed to do that. So, he's not following the admonition here of in the second part of verse 9. It says, for he shares his bread with the poor. So it would appear that this rich man did not share his bread with Lazarus. Lazarus ended up dying. It doesn't say, well, he died because the rich man didn't give him anything, because he was laid there full of sores. He was obviously very sick already. Linda?
Didn't it also say that he ate crumbs from his table?
No, no, no. That's the Syrophoenician woman from over in Tyre. She says that that even the dogs eat the crumbs that are underneath their master's table. But even that. In that particular one, the master acknowledging the Syrophoenician woman is acknowledging that there is a certain amount of benevolence even to those who are just of the kind that allow the dogs to lick up the crumbs. And so she was equating herself to Jesus as that. I'm the dog wanting to lick up the crumbs. What did she want, this woman from the city of Tyre? Her daughter. Her daughter was ill. And Jesus told her that he was not come but to the lost tribe of the lost children of Israel. And that's when she said, he says that it's not meet to give the children food to the dogs. And that's when she said, then even the dogs get to lick up the crumbs that are under their master's table. Yes, Linda.
Okay, the story of Rich Man and Lazarus, in verse 20 it says, a certain beggar named Lazarus was laid at his gate full of sores and desiring to be fed with the crumbs that fell from the rich man's table.
Oh, okay.
So even the dog came and licked his sores.
All right, so
he was wanting at least the crumbs.
Yeah, give me something. And he didn't. And he was right there at his gate.
Yeah.
You know. And I don't think it's like one of these, you know, southern mansions you see where the road winds all the way down to the gate. And it's like you have to get on your moped in order to go get the mail. The land of Israel where the people lived together like this was relatively crowded. And of course, if you go in the city of Jerusalem, it's like, you know, you're bumping elbows with walls all over the place. So, So this guy was not all that far divorced from the rich man. He was right there at his gate. And he could have done something, and he didn't. So he's not really emulating the idea here behind Proverbs 22 and 9, being a generous person. Latanya.
Help us to be mindful of people in need. When you give someone something, it can bring on anger when they don't give it back.
Mm.
It can cause you to sin. Do that. But just being mindful of people that does not have.
Yeah.
Help us to be mindful.
And as a matter of fact, that's what the people of God have been taught essentially since the beginning, is that we need to take care of one another. I don't have that commentary open right now, but there was the reference that was made to the one where in the Old Testament it says to love your neighbor as yourself. A lot of times we think, well, that's something that Jesus said. Well, no, Jesus was quoting from the Old Testament when he indicated that we need to love one another like ourselves. Yeah, and so we need to be. Now, I saw an article by somebody, and I didn't go through reading it. I just skipped through some of the headlines, and he says, "But we need to make sure that we're not like the person that can be judged of casting his pearls before swine." Or there was another portion to that also, just above that, but and. We need to be cautious about that. It's sort of like I saw one guy, and I believe it's not the only place that it happened, because I think I saw it on Facebook also. Some guy out in the middle of the street holding up his sign requesting assistance, and he says, "Well, I'm not going to lie. I want it for a beer. I go, okay. And I wouldn't be surprised that some of the people that said, yeah, he's going to go party, that they would have lent it to him or given it to him. But we have to be cautious in situations like that. But like we've alluded to, that we're supposed to give to a person that's in need without considering recompense or getting it back. Even though they may want to do that, then that's fine. Noah.
What I kind of struggle with is when you know they're on drugs, you know.
Yeah.
It's like not everybody grew up, you know, around drugs or knows what it looks like when somebody's on drugs. So, you know, you got to, I think, learn to decipher who's kind of mental, can't work, has a hard time helping themselves, and then who's just did it to themselves, right? Who's drugged out? And, so I try to look for those personally. But I can't find in scripture, you know, where it says to try to give to those who can't help themselves or look out for the drug addicts. You know what I mean? Like, I don't see. It says
get to the poor.
Right. But, so where you're supposed to give it to a tweaker, a meth addict. I think that's just common sense.
Yeah.
Common sense.
I mean, we've been told to be good stewards of the blessings that God has given us. And the thing is that there are ways to give to some people that don't include giving them money. I mean, if you've just finished eating your meal at Denny's, then there's a person standing outside that's asking for money. You say, well, are you hungry? I'll buy you a meal.
Or hand them your leftovers.
Or hand them that box that we got because we can't eat all that.
Right. Oh, they got some that take.
Yeah. That's fine. That's fine. Yeah. Yeah.
When they tell me that they going to drink or buy cigarettes or whatever, I said, I don't do that until I care how to support that.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't know.
Yeah. So, anyway. Yeah, Claire.
Yeah, one time, Jim and I think I was, had just finished eating somewhere, and there was a guy waiting outside, and he asked us if we had any money. We said, no, we can buy you a meal. And he said, well, I don't want that. He said, I need $10. Because that place over there told me they'd give me two meals for $10. We said, no, we'll buy you a meal here.
Well, let's go over there and get you 10 meals for $2. Two meals for $10.
Ten
meals for $2.
How he wants someone to treat us.
Yeah.
When you go that way, it helps you make a better sound decision on what you're going to do for a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How you going to feel when you think about yourself.
Yep. Yeah. What would happen if I lost it all?
Right. What you want someone to do for you.
I saw a younger man in his, I don't know, mid, maybe late teens, standing on Avenue K yesterday right at the freeway entrance. And he had a sign that he was showing to the people that were westbound on Avenue K that says, my mother is very sick and I'm in need. And I mean, what do you think about that? I mean, that's something that we need to be concerned about. And if I slow down enough to, you know, not be killed on the street and hand him a $10 bill, I mean, he said it's for his mom. I mean, what am I to do to judge, you know, if I have the ability and the, mine's going off too. I have the ability and the opportunity, I might as well do it. I need to be a good steward of the money that God has given me. I need to not be casting my pearls before swine. an interesting thing is that, you know, people asking for money, just as you come out of a bar, you know, you don't think that that's going to be, of course, what are you doing at a bar? But the thing is that, you know, that doesn't lead you to think that what they're going to want to buy with that is just to go right back inside and buy what they're selling there. And so, and well, once again, it's just a being a steward of God's blessings. So God has given us everything that we have. We need to make sure that when we do something with it, that we're doing the right thing. So if you have the opportunity and the blessings from God to give to others, then you should. I think one of the important things to look at, and I'm not saying that this is exclusively it, but in the Old Testament, the majority of the discussion about lending to the poor or giving to the poor is lending to the poor or giving to the poor brethren. In other words, in that instance, it was to the Jewish people at that time. So if we look at Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, and look at all the discussion giving to poor people or taking care of poor people, and many of the instances there, it says, if you see your brother in need, if your brother becomes poor. And so there's a lot of emphasis there on our brethren. And so what we need to do also is we need to be cognizant of the situation that our brethren are in. So that, because as we've seen and we've supported some of our brethren that have finally asked for it, and they universally say it is so difficult to ask for help. And so that's one thing that we need to be aware of is that many times we can see when a person is in need and we can do something about that. Yeah, is that what you wanted to say?
We shouldn't wait till they have to ask.
Right.
We just need to leave people.
Yeah.
A lot of
time, then you should. That's right. Right. So we see LaTanya needs a new car, we buy her.
I was thinking about the Samaritan. The good Samaritan, he wasn't a brother and he helped you.
That's true. Yeah.
Just whoever you can help.
So, yeah. So the man that wasn't even a brother of those others, you know. So, but it said that a certain man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he was set on by robbers. And so we don't know what situation he was either, I don't think. And, but, you know, the priest and the Levite went by on the other side of the road. You know, it's like, forget you, Jack. And here comes I don't see anything. I must have missed him. But we see the Samaritan that came by, and it says he was touched with compassion, something similar to that. And he had compassion on the man, and he helped him. It was obvious that the person needed help, whether he was a brother or not. Yeah, go ahead, Noah. 2 Thessalonians 3.
Starting in verse 10.
10.
You know, those who are unwilling to work shall not eat.
Right.
This is a principle that encourages a strong work ethic, productivity, self-sufficiency, teaching believers not to be idle or burdened on others, but is generally understood to apply to those capable of working but unwilling, not the sick, disabled, or genuinely needy, with the goal of community care temper. You know, basically, we've got to be good stewards to kind of decipher who's just lazy, I think, and unwilling to work, or who's mentally jacked up and really needs any kind of, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so we zipped right through that question. I'm going to propose that we zip on to the next question next week.
Good discussion.
It's interesting, especially when it's like, oh, well, this goes in lots of different directions. And, but there's things that we can understand there that we need to look at.
I'm going to say the question number three.
Oh, the question for number next week will be number 40 and 3. 2 score and 3.